Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to welcome you to another addiction. Good Lord. I want to thank you and welcome you to another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. So today's topic is a very controversial and very interesting topic and subject to discuss. But before I start, I want to give honor where honor is due and thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning. And thank those of you that are here today listening with me as we talk about this topic. So today's topic has to do with sex addiction. So today we're going to provide some insight into sex addiction. And I'm also going to introduce you to my guest who will be helping me with this. So let me see if this is my special guest.
Hi,
good morning.
Heather.
Hey,
good
Heather,
morning.
How you doing? Okay.
I'm good.
So
how are you?
I'm doing well. So let me introduce my guest. My guest's name is Heather DeQuinn. She's a licensed marriage family therapist in Glendora and Rancho Cucamonga, California. She helps individuals who feel stressed out and overwhelmed as they get a clear understanding about what they really want and to make choices to get there. She is a certified sex addiction specialist, which specializes in helping couples and individuals. So I want to thank you for joining me today. So how's your day going so far, Heather?
Great so far.
You know what? You better get ready because I've been getting some emails and phone calls and FaceTime calls and all kind of stuff. It's been a journey with this topic. And it's interesting because I know, but see, this is one of those topics that's really taboo. And it's one that a lot of people really don't feel comfortable talking about. And we're not on the air today to be trashy. We're not on the air to be sinful or, you know, talk about fantasies and things of that nature. We're actually here to help individuals as they basically understand the basics of identifying what it constitutes as sex addiction, and also to help individuals that are either involved, married to, loving, dating, whatever, someone who is an addict. You know, and a lot of times when we talk about the out-of-control sexual behavior, I had some emails and stuff that was sent to me and on Facebook in regards to talking about, you know, their sex life and, you know, God created us to basically to have sex and procreate and things of that nature. But the thing is, we're not talking about, you know, those that have a healthy sex life. And I even went as far as trying to do my research to find out what God has to say about in the Bible, because, you know, I'm not going to try to take it there, but if some pastors or individuals that are very spiritual or religious want to call in, your insight is definitely welcomed. Because one of the things is when we talk about this out-of-control sexual behavior, a lot of individuals, especially couples, feel disconnected, frustrated, angry, and sometimes some individuals are just so frustrated they don't know what to do to make their relationship work. Now, I'm going to ask you, Heather, what made you go into this field to become a certified sex addiction specialist?
You know, that's a question I get all the time. And my quick answer is shame. You know, when I first started seeing clients almost a decade ago, you know, shame is something that we all struggle with. And I would encounter clients who had a lot of shame about their sexuality, whether it was healthy or unhealthy. And I'm really passionate about breaking down that shame and helping people to really embrace a healthy, authentic, connected sexuality. And like you were saying, sex addiction is an unhealthy expression of our sexuality, and yet people feel so much shame about it. And I really wanted to open the door for people to be able to talk to somebody about that so that they could get help.
And you know what's interesting, because that is something that when I was looking and trying to do my research and getting this information, because a lot of individuals, especially my godbrother, was calling me talking about, Jeanette, how you going to talk about sex? I mean, you probably only have sex maybe once a year, you know, or are you sitting up here? And, you know, I've been teased all my life when it comes to stuff like that, because I grew up in a home with parents, and especially my mother, in my opinion, was very promiscuous. She was very vain. And I had this thing where I was like, ooh, it's nasty. Ooh, is this? Ooh, is that? You know, so I had a lot of hang-ups when it came to sex. And my godbrother used to always tell me, don't do this and don't do that. He gave me so many don't do's, hell, I didn't know what to do. And so now his excuse is, you're 50 years old, Jeanette. Get over it. You got to do something. You know, they say if you don't use it, you go lose it. So, you know, I've heard all of this stuff to where when you talk about what is healthy and what is unhealthy and what is too much sex, you know, and a lot of times many individuals want to know what is healthy. And most people are afraid to ask. And one of the things is today many individuals are engaging in a lot of sexual behaviors and that are questionable. Now, we have a caller on the line. Let me join this caller.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
How are
you? I'm okay. You know I know your voice, so I know who this is. So I don't know if you really want to join the conversation to start telling on yourself, or if you just want to listen.
I have a lot of different ones, and I don't know.
I can imagine, because, you know, I always thought you were kind of sneaky, okay? Even before your throat, you didn't say a lot, but I'm like, okay, you know. All right, yeah, and I'm gonna get back to when we were talking about that is I remember my godbrother teasing me, talking about Jeanette. For a long time, I wanted to ask you, how did you have your kids? Because they said, we didn't even know you was even having sex, you know. So what is healthy sex, Heather? What is healthy sex? Let's start with that.
Well, that is a big question. Goodness. You know, I think that it's also important to distinguish healthy and normal. A lot of times people use the word normal, and it's essential that we really clarify that there really isn't a normal, because there's such a range of normal or healthy sexuality. You know, healthy sexuality, first and foremost, is authentic, and it comes out of your entire being and personhood, you know. If you feel connected to yourself, to a partner, you know, whether that's self-stimulation or partnered sex or partners, if that's, you know, if you're in a polyamorous relationship, you know, really feeling connected to yourself and to others is probably the crux, I would say, of healthy sexuality.
Okay. Well, you know, today we live in a culture that is really obsessed with sex. It's in the media, it's in our churches, it's in our homes. And unfortunately, as we know, unlike other addictions or addictive behavior, we know this behavior is very taboo. While there's plenty of information as it relates to individuals, whether they're addicted to alcohol, drugs, food, or gambling, the problem is individuals that are addicted to sex are less likely to find help, and in most cases do not even realize that they have a problem. There may be several reasons for this, and that being that a sexual disorder is characterized, as we know, by the compulsive sexual thoughts and behavior in regards to compulsive. So we're going to go back to that too, Heather. And not only with the compulsiveness, it is poorly understood and sometimes difficult to diagnose. And I think it's kind of difficult to diagnose because a lot of times people are in denial. And in a culture where sex, like alcohol, is socially accepted and encouraged, and sexual images and provocation abound, it can become a challenge to distinguish between normal sexuality and excessive or abnormal sexual behavior. So one of the things that I did, Heather, I put out there, if you basically, or if individuals have some important things that are questions that they want to know, about it, because first of all, when we talk about our partners, a lot of times the partners get confused, and we're going to give them some information, but I want to put what I wrote down. It said first that it's not about sex. Secondly, it's not about you. And thirdly, restoration is possible, but it's only possible if the person is willing to come clean and get some help. And if you've been told that your sexual appetite is out of control, are you finding yourself preoccupied with sex, or perhaps just engaging in sexual behaviors that's causing a disruption in your life relationship, whether it's compulsive masturbation, multiple affairs, anonymous sex, obsessive dating, compulsive use of pornography, risky or unsafe sex, cyber sex, exhibitionism, voyeurism, prostitution, or the use of prostitutes to join in your behavior, give us a call. Now, you know what, caller? I'm going to ask you a question. What made you call me today? Can you hear me? Yeah, I don't want to say your name. I don't know if you want us to say your name. So what made you call me today?
Because I wanted to hear about it, because I've been through it for a lot of different reasons, and I just wanted to hear it and see if what I think is okay, or some people, because I've had a lot of bad things happen to me too, and I just wanted to hear what is right for it.
Okay. I want to start off by saying, as we talk about sexual addiction, because, you know, I'm a drug and alcohol therapist also. I'm the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction and J.A. Precious, Inc. And a lot of times I have clients or people come to me that have drug and alcohol addiction. And sometimes sex also plays a role in that. So when we talk about addiction, sometimes we talk about with drugs and alcohol is the use despite the consequences. Or, you know, we talk about the different lies that people tell themselves. But when we talk about sexual addiction, which is also known as sex addiction, it is a state characterized by that compulsive participation or engagement in sexual activity. Now, whether it's the intercourse, and it's despite the negative consequences. And I think the negative consequences is one of the things that individuals struggle with. What do you think about that, Heather?
Absolutely. You know, I think that really the things that characterize drug and alcohol addiction are the same things that we look at with sexual addiction. Continuation despite negative consequences. Exactly.
But then when we talk about those negative consequences sometimes, some individuals may still be in hiding. Because when we talk about that, and some individuals, it's kind of like, I'm not going to throw her name out there, but I sent one of my friends a tag, and I wanted her to call the show. And the first thing she said was, I have a low sex drive. I'm not hypersexual. And the thing is, it's not just about that. Because when we talk about that sex addiction is also known as hypersexual disorder, it's characterized by that persistent escalating sexual thoughts and the negative impact in the person's life. The problem is with sex addicts, they struggle to either control it, postpone those sexual feelings and actions. So they can do it anywhere and normally want it all the time. Most sex addicts do not even know how to achieve genuine intimacy, forming little or no attachment to their sexual partners. So that's why when I say it's not about the other person, a lot of times the person on the other end, meaning the partner, is offended by the other person's behaviors. And we're going to go in deeper into that. But what happens is eventually the pursuit of sex becomes more important than family, than career, even personal health and safety. As the sexual preoccupation increases in terms of energy and time, the sex addict follows a routine and ritual, leading to acting out on desires, which is followed by feelings of denial, then the shame, then the despair, and the confusion, and sometimes they don't even care. I have a question for you, Heather. I've had several different experiences with this. I've had parents bring their kids to me where their kid is excessively masturbating. What is your view on that? And one of the questions that they normally have is, what is excessive, what's not excessive when you're talking about masturbation?
I think that's a great question. Because, of course, excessive, we need to define what that means. So, and if, of course, if you're talking about, you know, teenagers who are filled with a bunch of new hormones, they're going to be engaging in some type of sexual self-stimulation, probably more than their parents want to admit, right?
That's true.
When we're looking at the word excessive, you know, we have to be, first of all, honest about sexuality. You know, some people are going to have a higher sex drive than others, and that's okay. So let's say that you're masturbating 3 or 4 times a day. I wouldn't necessarily call that excessive. If you're masturbating 10 times a day, that might be a problem. You know, what we really want to look at with the word excessive is this something that is interfering with your ability to get stuff done? You know, are you... You know, are you late to school because you're masturbating all the time? Are you skipping classes? You know, if we're talking about teenagers, of course. You know, are you late for work? You know, are you choosing to masturbate instead of being intimate with your partner? You know, are you – I have had clients who have masturbated to the point of self-injury, right? And that's where we're – it's really clear that we see that, you know, continuation despite a negative consequence. You know, if you are injuring yourself – because you cannot control your compulsion to achieve an orgasm, then obviously you're out of control. And that's something for people to look at when we're talking about excessive. You know, if it's something that is causing harm in your life and relationships, I would call that excessive. I wouldn't want to put a number on it, though, because it's so individual to each person.
Correct. And I think that's what happens is a lot of times parents, you know, if they see their little child in the bathtub fondling themselves, they'll say, okay, that's normal. But then I was watching with my clients the other day the story of the child that has the rage. It's called Child Rage, and the story of Beth. And one of the things that the mother said was they was in a parking lot, and Beth just started playing masturbating. And she would do it to the point where she would bleed. But then Beth was also molested as a child. So sometimes we find, or we may find that you, a person may be prone to sexual addictions if there is childhood trauma, but that's not always the case. So I want to give a disclaimer, too. When we talk about sex addiction and when we talk about sex offenders, two separate issues. It's not the same thing. So I want to make sure we put that out there. Now,
what do you mean?
Excuse me? What did you say?
What did you say?
I said when we talk about sex addiction versus sex offenders, it's two different issues. Meaning, a person may have a sex addiction and may not cause any physical harm to another person, meaning it's things that they do to themselves to pleasure themselves. Or they may go out and solicit and do other things. An individual that is a sex offender may have committed criminal acts either against a child or have raped someone as part of their sex addiction, but that may not be the case. So I don't know if there's been any research or studies done to determine in regards to serial rapists or in regards to individuals that are, you know, into child pornography or sex offenders, if they've done a lot of studies and research in regards to that. Do you know of anything about that, Heather? Because I've never dug that deep into it.
I'm sure that there is. Off the top of my head, I'm not thinking of any. But I want to add to what you're saying, too, because this is how I think of it. I think of sex addiction and sex offending as kind of a Venn diagram, right? So there is a small area of overlap where, you know, you see behaviors that are in both sides. But they are very much mutually exclusive also. So say, for example, you know, someone who's an exhibitionist, right? You know, they're out there exposing themselves to an unwilling observer, right? So that is a sexual offense, offending. If that person is doing it compulsively, that is also a sex addiction, right?
Correct.
So the thing that we want to look at for sex offending is behavior that violates the rights of others, Right. So like what you said, you know, it's a criminal, it's a criminal act, right? Mm-hmm. So that's different from being a sex addict.
Correct. And you know what? And I want to go there with that because I had the opportunity to interact or engage with individuals and growing up in Compton, too. I think that had a lot to do with a lot of things that myself and a lot of my childhood friends that I've been communicating with in regards to the topic that we talked about. But I will never forget there was a time where my cousin and I were riding bicycles, and my cousin kept saying, "Go, Jeanette, go, go, Jeanette, go." And I couldn't understand why she wanted me to go. But there was a guy riding on the side of us, and he was masturbating as we were riding bicycles. And he blew the horn, she looked, and that excited him. And I saw that so much growing up. If a person or if I was dating a guy and he started masturbating in front of me, that scared me because it kind of brought up that traumatic experience of witnessing that. And then I had the opportunity of knowing someone who basically got in trouble for that because he would follow school buses. And when he was following school buses, he would blow the horn. The kids on the bus would look at him, and that turned him on. And I had to let him know. I was like, that's not funny. Those kids, and he really thought those kids was really excited by seeing that, and that was not the case. So trying to teach him and letting him know, that's not appropriate. That is so not appropriate. But the judge did better. Like, the judge said, you know what? The judge told him, give me, turn in your car, sell your car, you go ride a motorcycle. So he had to ride a motorcycle because you can't be playing with yourself riding on a motorcycle. If you do that, you might crash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some individuals that do like exposing themselves and the exhibitionists and things of that nature, and then trying to change that behavior, you know. So in regards to when we talk about, when we talk about just sex addiction and things of that nature, and before we get into the books and the meaning and all of this in regards to this, one of the areas that Heather, I find to be very interesting when you're talking about these different behaviors, because people say, well, the types of sex addiction, there's a wide range of behaviors and the symptoms of a sex addiction. Multiple affairs. What do you think about that? Because a lot of times individuals don't realize that just engaging in multiple affairs, the individual can have a sex addiction. What's your comment on, in regards to that?
You know, I think it's a little bit tricky. You know, if someone's having multiple relationships at the same time, or even, you know, serial affairs where it's, you know, one relationship after another with no break in the middle, you know, really then the relationship or the affair is meeting some need. Because, you know, very few, and of course, there's a difference then with polyamory. So someone who is having multiple relationships and everyone knows about it and is okay with it, that's totally different than having a secret life. You know, someone who's having multiple affairs where it's secret and hidden, and, you know, there's obviously a driving kind of intriguing force going on there. You know, that might be a sexual addiction. And we really have to look at what's motivating that behavior. You know, what is this person getting out of having all of these things going on at the same time? And I've worked with clients who have multiple relationships going simultaneously, and oftentimes it's that it's meeting a need, you know, related to wanting to feel desired, wanting to feel attractive and interesting, and, you know, really managing anxiety by escaping your current life and kind of going and being this different person with your, an affair partner than you are in your regular day-to-day life.
Well, you know what? The multiple affairs also has a lot to do with the anonymous sex, because with the anonymous sex, you may not know the individual, just like the obsessive dating. Is those three categories in regards to the multiple affairs, the anonymous sex, and the obsessive dating. Some individuals, especially young men, kind of think it's a rite of passage. I had a friend tell me yesterday, and he said, I know I'm a sex addict. I've been a sex addict ever since I was 10 years old. And I was like, wow. because he thought about it, and when he was first introduced to sex at the age of 10, he liked it. And I was like, what you doing at 10? You know, you're not even probably shooting sperm at 10, you know, but it was just a feeling. And a lot of things, especially with parents, we need to be really mindful. And we can kind of touch on that in regards to what we expose our kids to, too. But the obsessive dating, the multiple affairs, the anonymous sex, it kind of ties in to your behavior. And it kind of goes back to in regards to forming little or no attachment to their sexual partners, meaning they don't really view it as them trying to be intimate or involved in a relationship. Do you think that it's just more of the behavior?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you sexual addiction can take on so many different expressions, right? So it's really about what's driving the behavior, you know? So someone can have a strong sex drive and still be healthy, right? But like you mm-hmm. said, it's about not having an attachment, not really developing intimacy, but just being about the physical act of sex, right? Mm-hmm. Or even the act of pursuing sex can also be quite intoxicating, right? You know, really get, you
correct.
Know, the beginning stage of a relationship, getting to know someone and those first dates and first moments, those things that we all find exciting, that is very intoxicating. And, mm-hmm. you know, that can be addictive as well. And so it's really important to look at what is driving the behavior and not just the behavior itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about, and like, just basically because I'm leaving the pornography and the prostitution kind of last, because when you start talking about even just the risky, unsafe sex, you know, that is very, very dangerous. And the cyber sex, you know, a lot of individuals are so hooked on this online dating and, you know, sexing on basically the social media. And even with Facebook, I'm kind of hesitant about who I accept as a Facebook friend because I'll look at their page or whatever, and then if I see things that are inappropriate, I'm noticing that even on Facebook, a lot of people are using Facebook as a way of dating, and they're also using Facebook sending pornography through Facebook. And it pisses me off because here I am clicking on this, and I got people having sex. And I tell people, and it's crazy because everything I do makes it eyeball around food. So when I start looking at it, I get hungry, and I want to eat because that's just never, ever been my thing, which brings me to the compulsive use of pornography. One of the things that I've been, when I was receiving these information and people sending me this stuff, is some individuals, maybe they like pornography themselves. Some individuals use it as a tool to learn, you know, new techniques, new skills, or whatever the case may be. And some individuals find it very, very gross in regards to they are appalled at some of the things that the people are doing or their sexual activity. And I remember when I was young and my friends used to want to go to strip clubs and stuff like that, they got to the point they stopped taking me because every time they would ask me to go, I'd be in a snack bar line. I was always buying me something to eat because I didn't want to see all of that. What do you think about that, and what do you think when it becomes compulsive? Let's talk a little bit about compulsive pornography.
Let's
Heather?
See. I would say, yeah, I was thinking. You know, again, when we're looking at compulsive, it's that sense of being out of control, you know, trying to stop mm-hmm. the behavior and yet you just can't. So oftentimes we see things, you know, compulsive pornography viewing coming up where people get caught at work, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden they get called
mm-hmm.
into the IT department or the HR department and, hey, it's like we saw your browser history and this is a problem. And of course, that's one of those consequences that you were talking about before, where if you're continuing, despite knowing that your company is checking your email and, you know, watching what you're doing on your browser, that's something that, you know, kind of indicates that there's that compulsive nature to it that we need to look at. Again, with pornography, it's compulsive viewing of pornography. It's not really about the amount of time or that you're investing in it. It's about what else are you missing out on in your life so that you can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at pornography for, say, 2 hours a day, but you also go to work and you hang out with friends and you have, you know, social activities and you're getting physical exercise, then that 2 hours spent looking at pornography is probably just fine because it's not really interfering with your life. But if you wake up and you look at porn and you're looking at porn at work and you're looking at porn after work and you would rather look at porn than spend time with your family or friends, then that is something that indicates that there's a compulsive or addictive nature to your pornography viewing.
Well, one of the things I want to say, Heather, because what I found, especially in my line of work, is a lot of individuals view it as being natural, or, you know, because they was either exposed to pornography at a very young age. I was talking to my father yesterday, and I was telling him about my topic, and I started laughing because I shared something with him that he didn't even know I knew. And when I was a kid growing up, in my mother's closet, he had a box, and his box was full of books. And whenever my aunt would babysit us, she would have her friends over, and they was always reading those books. And I didn't know how to read. So they would give me a book, and all I could do was look at the pictures, but I didn't know what the heck I was looking at. And when I was talking to my aunt this morning, and I was telling her about that, I said, you know, I want you to know, I know y'all gave me that book because y'all didn't want me telling on y'all, because you can say Jeanette was looking at it too, but I didn't even know what I was looking at. And my father was like, yeah, I had every nasty book you can think of, any nasty author. And when I was a kid, I didn't know that that was a sex addiction. All I knew was in my mother's closet was a box with some books, and people would like to look at them. And I didn't know what it was about, you know. And then as I got older, I started seeing, you know, prostitutes and things of that nature. And I used to call them pretty ladies. And I knew that, like they say, prostitution is the oldest job in on earth is being a prostitute, you know. But by that same token, there are some individuals that have sex addiction that may not engage in the use of either prostitution or hiring prostitutes. But then I want to take it to another area, because when I talked about it being in the churches, a lot of times there's a lot of individuals that are struggling with being in ministry, engaging in the use of prostitution, having a double life, having a secret life. And I know we're going to get to some of the warning signs, but what is your take on that when you start talking about prostitutions and the use of prostitutes? And I don't want the prostitutes calling me ready to cuss me out, talking about, look, Jeanette, don't be trying to mess up my job and my money. So what do you think about that?
Goodness. I would say, because I'm like,
you know,
what do I think about prostitution or what do I think about addiction? You know, because people can visit a prostitute or be a prostitute without being a sex addict, right? So first and foremost, you know, engaging in prostitution, whether you're the buyer or the giver, does not make you a sex addict at all. Again, it's really about, like I said before, what's driving the behavior. So if you are, you know, I've had clients who spend hours on escort sites and, you know, looking at ratings of prostitutes, trying to figure out who they should hire or contract with. And then I've had clients who have, you know, gotten propositioned in elevators, you know, when they're visiting Vegas, you know. So there's a whole range of behaviors when we're looking at prostitution. So someone who's being a prostitute or engaging in prostitution is not automatically a sex addict. But again, you can be a sex addict who utilizes prostitution.
Correct.
You know, when it comes to someone who has chosen to be a prostitute as a career choice, you know, that's something for that person to be aware of within themselves. You know, what made them choose to be a prostitute? Is it, you know, we know that there's a lot of statistics about childhood sexual abuse and prostitution. You know, there's a lot of human trafficking that we need to be aware of as well. And then, of course, there are some people who have chosen prostitution as a career. But I would say that the percentage of people who've chosen it with a clear mind and conscience is probably a very small percentage compared to those who were more or less forced into or compelled into that career choice due to necessity or trauma.
Correct. And you know what? And the thing is, I talk to some prostitutes, and some prostitutes just say they like sex. And you can really learn a lot from a prostitute, because a prostitute, I tell people, there's five people I enjoy talking to. One is a kid, because kids are mostly honest unless they're in trouble. Secondly, I love talking to individuals that are or have a drug addiction because they have a lot of talent, a lot of skills that sometimes they don't even implement and use. I enjoy talking to older people because there's a lot of wisdom there. You know, people say, don't talk to them. They old. They this. Well, they didn't get that old being stupid. They are very wise. I love talking to not only the older individuals but the winos, because a wino also has a story. But I love talking to prostitutes because prostitutes know how to make relationship works. They know how to tell you exactly what you want to hear, give you what you need when you want it, and that's what they do. They know exactly what they're doing. Now, I want to transition a little bit into some of the warning signs because we basically have 24 minutes left on the air. And if you want to call in on the show, you can give us a call at 516-387-1914. And I am not going to throw you out there or sit there and embarrass you on the phone because this is a learning experience, because I do have some questions for Heather, considering this is the type of work that she do. And, Heather, you're doing an awesome job. Thank you. See, that lets us know that it wasn't pre-script because we didn't talk about this. I didn't tell you what questions we was going to ask. We just do it, okay? In regards to the warning signs of sexual addiction, sex addicts have a variant pattern that can result in different ways of acting out. And here are some of the general warning signs of sex addiction. The secretive or dangerous sexual behaviors, meaning they start lying about it and hiding their sexual activities. I've seen situations where individuals learned that their significant others had a double life, a secret life, people that may have found receipts, that they've been going to hotels with strangers and, you know, and things of that nature. So if you don't think nothing is wrong with it, why are you hiding it? You know, so just the lying and the hiding, the sexual activity. Having sex regardless of the consequences, whether it's, you know, the threat of being caught, facing financial problems, the risk of contracting a sexually transmitted diseases or any type of disease, that's another part. Engaging in the practice of voyeurism or exhibitionism in ways that bring discomfort, pain, or legal problems, and legal or career problems due to sexual behavior is some of the secretives are in regards to the warning signs. When we talk about inappropriate sexual behaviors, because that's a whole other issue, having sex at inappropriate times, which is one of the things we talked about, inappropriate places, and with inappropriate people. Now, it's interesting because we talked about things of that nature, and do you know that when we talk about indecent exposure, a lot of times individuals back in the day would go to the club, have sex in the parking lot, you know, have oral sex with people they don't know or things of that nature. People don't realize that if you get caught doing it now, they can make you register as a sex offender. Because when you think about that, you know, because before people didn't realize that, they would just do it. Unknowingly flirting with or sexualizing with someone, compromising one's reputation due to sexual behavior, or having serious relationships threatened or destroyed because of outside sexual activity is a problem. Feeling uncomfortable about masturbation because of frequency, the fantasy one engaged in, the props used or placed ones in masturbates, and feeling entitled to sex. Now, when we start talking about using sex to cope with problems or needing more sex to feel normal, I remember a friend tried to take me to one of those places where you go buy stuff. I had never been one. And he thought I was lying. Heather, that man took me in that store. I was scared to death. What really got me was the woman was talking about a bullet. I didn't know what the hell a bullet was. When I started seeing them dildos and the prices of them dildos, it amazed me at the price that people pay for that kind of stuff. But also what gets me is sometimes I notice, depending on your relationship, some individuals are offended by that. Let's say a woman likes her dildo, but her husband is offended by it. And with you doing this type of work, how would you handle that, Heather? What would you say to the male who has a wife that loves using a vibrator?
You know, that would be for the couple to negotiate. You know, it would be helping, my goal would be to help him understand what she finds pleasurable about it, and then to help her understand why he's offended. You know, we always want to, you know, we therapists, we like to dig down deep and get into the, all the underlying stuff, right? You know, but in any coupleship, it's all about negotiation. It's about compromise. It's about really learning about your partner and what's important to them. You know, so I would help them to come to a compromise that felt comfortable to them. You know, I could tell them, you know, well, you should do this and you should do that. You know, maybe you shouldn't use your vibrator, or maybe she should use her vibrator and he should just get used to it. You know, I could come up with all kinds of solutions, but it's really about helping them to determine what is going to work best for their relationship and really to understand, you know, maybe he needs some better skills in pleasuring her. That, you know, she can get it from a vibrator and she's not getting it from him. Maybe she doesn't know how to ask for what she wants. You know, that's something that we all struggle with sexually. You know, as sexual of a culture as we are, we also have a lot of hang-ups about sex and we have a hard time talking about it. So maybe she needs a little help in being able to ask for what she wants. Maybe he can grow in learning how to pleasure her better. You know, there's so many factors to look at. But ultimately, it would be up to them to determine what is going to work best for their relationship.
Gotcha. Okay, I have an email. The email says, I've been married for 25 years, and I just learned that my husband is often going to strip clubs. I don't know if he's cheating on me. What should I do?
Well, my gut response is ask him. Now, of course, that is a dangerous question. It can feel so threatening. It's very, very vulnerable, right? Especially when, you know, it's been a long time, 25 years, and you just discovered this is happening. But, of course, going to strip clubs and cheating physically are two different things. A lot of people go to strip clubs just to observe as opposed to, you know, engaging physically. And the only way to know that is just to ask. You know, and the thing that happens so often with partners when they discover that their loved one is engaging in sexual behaviors apart from their relationship, partners are flooded with questions, right? Who, what, when, where, why, how, you know, and they want details. And there's a lot of anxiety and even trauma related to learning about, you know, this person who you've placed all your, you know, trust and commitment in, and now you find out there's this other life that's happening. And it's so important to kind of slow yourself down and, you know, get to the point where you can ask. And if you need to, you know, see a therapist to help facilitate that conversation, because it can be very difficult. It can be very painful. And, you know, that's why I got certified as a sex addiction therapist, because I wanted to have the tools to help people have that conversation, because obviously it's going to be very difficult.
Gotcha. I want to read something because I told the person that I would read their post. And they said, what's so wrong with liking and enjoying the pleasures of sex? What are you saving it for? There's nothing wrong with partaking in good, healthy, clean, fun sex. If God didn't want us to enjoy sex, it wouldn't have been created. How else do you procreate? And who has the right to say when sex is too much? Who made them the sex police? Since when did moaning, screaming, laughing, rolling your eyes in the back of your head, heart racing, tingling off, feeling good, and exploding into pure ecstasy and addiction and require therapy? Baby, let me tell you, if it's a cure for it, I don't want it. Just let me hurt myself. Recover, nothing, a glass of wine and a nap in his arms and a nice hot bubble bath, some nice music and another round of humping, grinding, kissing, and loving and coming can't fix. Better do it as long and as often as you can. Gonna come a time when you can give it away. Like my mom used to say, I'm just saying. Now, one of the things I said to this person is, I told her thank you for the comment, and I'll read it on the air. I basically, when we talk about healthy sex is different from unhealthy sex. And my kind of response to the woman was, what do you do when you've done all that and your person or your partner, you go to sleep and your partner gets up and starts masturbating, or your partner leaves and goes to the strip club, or your partner felt that wasn't enough? Because one of the things is, a lot of times the person on the other end kind of feels like, well, wow, what did I do? What did I didn't do? You know, and her response was, not just men, but women do the same thing. Sometimes they just don't hit the spot. You might have an orgasm and still feel like, that just wasn't enough, and your man don't have enough juice in his tank, so you pull out and draw buddy and get that last little yes, no out. Nothing wrong with it. I like porn, with or without my man. I love getting ideas, learning new positions, getting stimulated, no matter what. Call it addiction or call it healthy. Orgasms are good for you mentally and physically. And if I had it my way, I would have one every morning and night. Get my day started and put me to sleep with a glass of wine or without a porn. And then it goes on to healthy. She's talking about add spice to your life. Now, what do you think about that? Because this was a conversation that I was going on and on and on and on and on with this young lady. But one of the things is, if you are engaged in a healthy relationship, and she kind of took it to biblical. Now, what I did when I saw that, Heather, is I went and I started Googling, what does the Bible say about sex? And I learned that it didn't say anything in regards to sex with your husband or wife when you're married. What it talked about is, when you're talking about that, is having sex outside of your marriage and, you know, talking about things of that nature. And that was what I learned when it talked about what the Bible has to say. Because what happens between a husband and a wife is between a husband and wife, especially when it's consensual. As long as you're not, you know, bringing other people into it and things of that nature. And it says, in regards to, does the Bible prohibit sexual pleasure? It says the Bible answer. Rather than prohibited sexual pleasure, the Bible shows that it is a gift from God to married people. He created humans, male and female, which I'm not going to even go into that because I don't want to get into people's sexuality, and viewed what he made as being very good, talked about in Genesis. When he brought the first man and woman together in marriage, he said, they must become one flesh. The bond included a pleasure of sexual intimacy along with close emotional connections. But when we talk about sex addiction, there is a problem with that emotional connection. And when it talks about limits on sexual pleasure, because I started doing my homework, God reserves sexual relations for marriage mates only, as Hebrews 13:4 shows. Let marriage be honorable and among all, and the marriage bed be without defilement, for God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Married couples must be faithful and maintain their commitment to each other. So just a disclaimer, we're not talking about, you know, what married people do in their room or things of that nature. But what I would say is, and I thought about this even as me being a mother of two adult children myself, is what are we teaching our children? So, Heather, I have a question for you. When you're working, and you're working with couples, and you're working with them in regards to whether a person has a sex addiction or not, what are some of the red flags you see? And then I want to know, what do you do when they have children?
Those are both good questions. So when I'm seeing couples where sex addiction is the issue, you know, obviously we're working on a lot of the things that we work on in traditional couples therapy, you know, communication and emotional connection, intimacy, all of these things. But of course, you know, when a couple comes in with betrayal, which a sexual addiction brings to the relationship, right, or even any kind of, you know, physical or emotional engagement apart from the relationship, there is a deep sense of betrayal. And so the things that we're working on first and foremost is restoring a sense of safety. You know, the mm-hmm. idea that, you know, this person, because now, of course, we have to rebuild trust. And so, you know, the first goal is, you know, can I trust you with little things, right? So let's say, for example, that, mm-hmm. you know, you've been, you know, staying late at work, quote unquote, at work. And then I find out that, you know, you've been staying at work with your secretary or your business partner or whomever. Well, you know, maybe boundary number one is you need to come home on time. You know, or we need mm-hmm. to install an app on your phone so that I know where you are. You know, first goal with couples is to reestablish a sense of trust. And there's a lot of work to do for the person who's been the betrayer to earn back that trust, to, you know, maybe one of the things that the sexual addiction has, you know, one of the ways it's manifested has been, you know, the person wanting certain things sexually that his or her partner didn't want to give or that they didn't know how to ask for. That would be something that we would address at some point in our therapy, but it wouldn't be step one, right? So if, say, for example, someone was really into BDSM or something that was kinky and they didn't know how to ask their partner for that, so they were going outside of the relationship for it. You know, we would want to talk about that at some point in the relationship, but we wouldn't start off with that because first we want to reconnect that sense of trust. And then, you know, down the line, we can look at, okay, so you have this desire or this interest. How do we reintegrate that into your relationship so that the two of you are connecting together? And then, of course, when it comes to children, that's a whole other topic, right? And this is what's important, I think, first and foremost with children when it comes to sex addiction is, you know, if it's the parents who are struggling with sex addiction, we want to be mindful of what we're sharing with our kids. You know, we don't want necessarily want to hide things because, of course, that's what sex addiction is. It's a hidden life. But we also want to have boundaries with our children. You know, children don't need to know all the ins and outs of their parents' sex lives or sexual struggles. You know, we and we don't, and we want to make sure too that we're not shaming the person who acted out. You know, we don't want to put things out there like, you know, mommy or daddy is a bad person because they did this, this,
correct,
and this. You know, we want to protect.
No,
what were you saying? You want,
I think my biggest issue was the parents. My parents didn't know how to teach us about that. I have a caller calling in. Let me join this caller, and I know we only have 8 minutes left. Let's see what this caller has to say, and we're gonna, I'm going to let you finish where you picked up at. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio with Precious Predicaments. And what do you have to say, caller?
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I didn't. I just called. I didn't know what was the gist of the conversation, so I was just getting.
Which?
This is, by the way, this is Quentin Morgan, but I was just getting acclimated to. To the gist of the conversation. What is the subject?
The subject basically has to do with sex addiction and understanding or giving insight into sex addiction. And basically talking about it within relationships, because I have on the air Heather Sequin. She's a licensed therapist at Clear Choice Counseling, and she has two office locations. And she talks about the basics of identifying sex addiction and how to help partners that basically are in a relationship with someone who may not even know that they have a sex addiction. We're talking about these behaviors because even myself in private practice, sometimes I have couples come to me, and these couples are struggling with some of the behavior. So I know we have 7 minutes, and I want to hear what you got to say, but I want to give the 20 types of behaviors. Fantasies, consequences, pornography use, networking for anonymous sex, swinging and group sex, because that's where children come involved too, Heather, because a lot of times kids find out their parents are swingers. Cruising behavior, meaning going online, looking for people, relationship addictions, meaning they go from relationship to relationship, the conquest, intrusive sex, humiliating and dominating. When you were talking, Heather, it made me remember one time I was doing a group, and I had about 10 women in my group who were dominatrix. And people was transferring to my group, and I couldn't figure out why, because they knew I had a group full of dominatrix. The pain exchange, paying for sex, whether it's commercials, paying for sex for power, phone sex, voyeurism, covert intrusion, exhibitionist, exploitive sex and trust, explosive sex with children, drug interaction, object sex, and home-produced pornography. So, Quinn, what do you want to add to this conversation as we talk about these things and how people can go about getting help in relationships? And when
let me say this. I'm going to go another direction. Do you think that, this is for both of you all, do you think that some guys can use that avenue as a reason or an excuse for their cheating? Because we're hearing sex addiction now more than ever. So I think, I mean, I think that some guys might use that avenue as a reason for their cheating. What do you think about that?
I think a lot of times guys have already been engaging in that behavior, and as they've already been engaging in behavior, a lot of guys that I met don't feel that there's nothing wrong with it. They think that what they do is their business, and that's what turns mm-hmm. them on. And a lot of times, in some cases, the woman may have known prior, and in some cases, it could be a surprise, especially if the woman have no idea of some of the behaviors that their significant other have been engaging in. Okay, Heather, what's your response?
I would agree. I think that, the trick is someone, just having an affair or cheating, and that's just, what they like to do, or is it really addictive? When it comes to something that's addictive, we're looking at compulsiveness. We're looking at, disregard of consequences. And so if someone is caught cheating and says, well, I couldn't help it, I was a sex addict, I would question that. Are you really a sex addict, or are you just trying to get out of jail free card?
And that's what I'm trying to say, because a lot of, as of late, the last 7-8 years or so, that's been a new thing now, where the guys get caught, especially in the entertainment business. The guys get caught mm-hmm. cheating. Oh, I have a sex addiction. So it's like a pass, because he has an addiction. Correct. So you go to these little classes or whatnot. But really, it can really not be an addiction. It's just, something that you just want to do. You know what I mean? So
you took us there, because when you said that, I thought about LL Cool J. I thought about Kirk mm-hmm. Franklin. I thought about a lot of the movie stars that have basically, they've known or they've said had a sex addiction. And it is, made me wonder, was it a get out of jail free card, or what was it about their behavior? But then I remember years ago, I was dating a guy, and I wasn't very well acclimated with sex stuff. And his behavior scared me. And he would always have, sex magazines all over the place, books all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I would try to make it seem like I was nosy. So I would say, well, can I read your book? Can I take this home? And I still got his book, so I need to give him his book back. And I never got past the penis part of the page. I still got my little napkin when it got the penis. I was like, oh, and I don't want to read past this. But one time I was at his place, and I found dildos in his closet. It scared me to death. I was like, what? And then I found a video of him dancing naked, and I was like, And when I went to his ex-wife, all she told me was, he's special. I'm like, what the hell you mean he's special? What is this? I was scared. I ain't gonna even lie. I was scared to death. That was too much information for me.
Well, that may be a borderline between sex addiction and just kinky or weird. And that's subjective as well. But what does a man need with dildos? I mean, what does a man need with dildos?
Know.
He may have had some other things going on.
You haven't said stuff with me, so I don't know. I was scared. Well, but that's what I got for being nosy. I said I ain't being nosy no more. I'm gonna mind
with
my
a dildo
own
strap
business.
On. With a dildo
I,
strap
I
on with a strap on.
I saw two different size dildos. In his closet, in the bag. I was like, okay, what's this about? I was scared to death. I didn't go back.
right. Like, he might not have had a sex addiction. He just might have been weird.
I guess. I don't know, but I need to get him his books back so I can get him his books.
How long
I
you
never
had
read
his book? Hold on. How long you had his book?
Oh, God. Oh, Lord. I've had the book since 1990-something.
Still looking at it.
I never passed the penis. I never passed the penis page. I just stopped. I stopped. I told you it makes me hungry. I get hungry. Okay, we got
hungry or horny.
Left.
Hungry or horny.
Hungry. I get hungry. I don't get horny. I get hungry. I want to eat.
Oh,
I ain't got time for all that.
Okay.
I get hungry. Okay, so I want to say, because I know we got a minute left. There is help for individuals that are struggling with their relationship. Like I said, a lot of times people go into all these different Plenty of Fish, Tinder, all of this stuff. Heather Sequin is the owner of Clear Choice Counseling, and she is a sex addiction specialist that works in sale. There's also places in San Diego. You can call me, Jeanette Abney. There's also Sex Anonymous meetings that people can go to. That, it's very interesting. I used to say I wanted to go to one of those meetings just to be nosy and see what they were talking about. So, Quinn, what do you want to say in closing? And tell them what you're doing. What event you have going on, Quinn? We got about 60 seconds left.
Tell them what you got.
Oh, wow. Okay. My name is Quentin Morgan. I'm a relationship advocate. As a relationship advocate, I publicly support multiple ways and concepts in which people connect or their state of being connected. This coming Saturday, March the 11th, I will be in Nevada, Las Vegas, speaking at the Windmill Library from 4 to 7, I believe, and I'll be speaking on the 6 type of men and 6 type of women to avoid. And I'll also be in Atlanta April the 21st, I believe, and I'm in Oklahoma May the 3rd or May the 5th around. I'll be in Atlanta doing it as well. And I have 3 books that's out right now. One is called Male Baggage, Understanding the Burden and Impediments That Men Bring Into Relationships. The second one is called Male Baggage 2, Masters of Deception. And my third book, which is the bestseller, is called Female Baggage, the Understanding the Issues That Some Women May Bring Into Relationships. I also have 2 movies that's out, or 2 documentaries that's out as well, based upon my first and my third book.
Gotcha. Well, thank you guys for listening, and thank you for joining me, Precious Predicaments, Blog Talk Radio. Till next week. See you then. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Clinton.
Right.
Thank you, caller.
Right, thank you,
Ned.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'll see you next week.